Correct.
Correct.
Thank you. Okay, and please. We have the Chief Judge, Jeff Kramer's with us. And Chief Judge, the floor is yours.
Good morning, and thank you for allowing me to appear this morning on this informational item. So just a little background as to why I am here. I had noticed, let me step back and make a more global statement. The criminal justice system in Milwaukee County is run by a variety of partners. It starts with funding from taxpayers, which you folks, the county board and the county executive, are responsible for procuring for us so that we have a criminal justice system. And after that, it's law enforcement, the district attorney's office, and the courts. And we have to work together in order to operate a criminal justice system. It is at the heart of the National Institute of Corrections grant that Milwaukee was given, one of only three sites in the country to get that grant, to look at what we're doing. Are we using best practices? Are we doing things that are data-driven, that we're able to justify and replicate? In order to do that, we have to talk, we have to communicate, we have to collaborate. And I had noticed the most startling example was in December, as of December of last year, something close to between 150 and 200 people serving sentences in Milwaukee County had been placed on electronic monitoring by the sheriff. I acknowledge, as I have always acknowledged in every conversation with anybody, county board, sheriff's department, anybody else, that the responsibility under the statute for deciding who gets put on electronic monitoring is solely the sheriff's. Judges can recommend, can give opinions on it, but at the end of the day, the sheriff is the one who makes a determination of who goes on electronic monitoring. Notwithstanding that, the sheriff had placed close to 200 people on electronic monitoring. That meant that those 200 people were not using up the most expensive resource in our criminal justice system, a jail bed. Then suddenly in December, that changed for reasons that to this day have not been explained to anybody else in the criminal justice system, not the district attorney, not the defense attorneys, and certainly not the courts, despite our requests for that information. So seeing that and experiencing a number of other issues with respect to movement of inmates that affected court operations, that affected what goes on in the courts, I asked for some information. If any county board of supervisors subcommittee or committee of the whole ever wants to know what's going on in the courts, all you have to do is pick up your phone and call me or walk into my office. I'm not a formal guy. You don't have to schedule an appointment. If you ask me to come to one of your meetings because you have questions, I'll be here, unless I'm on vacation, which isn't very often, according to my family. But if you want information, whether it's on policy issues or operational questions or finance issues, I will be here to answer your questions. The problem with the Sheriff's Department that has risen to this point is I can't get that kind of policy question answered by any members of the Sheriff's Department command staff, who I see a number of them here today. The problem is they don't speak for the sheriff when it comes to policy. So I asked in a private letter to the sheriff. It went to no one else, didn't go to the media, didn't go to any of you. It went only to the sheriff. I hand-delivered it, asking for a meeting with the sheriff to address the issues that are set forth in that letter. The response I got was silence for about 10 days. Then, I'm sure Inspector Schmidt can clarify this if he wants to. I don't specifically recall whether I called him or he called me. I think he called me and said, I'm calling in response to the letter. I said, great, when's the meeting going to be? He said, the only meeting you get is with him, Inspector Schmidt, and perhaps other people, command staff of the detention services, Major Evans, and maybe somebody else. I said, that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a meeting with the sheriff so we can discuss, because the sheriff, at least as much as I knew, was the one who made the decision to take all these people off electronic monitoring. Why should I care about who's on electronic monitoring? Well, very simply, Judges are asked all the time at sentencing, whenever someone gets a community-based sentence, and by community-based sentence I mean to the jail or to the what was formerly called the House of Corrections, they are asked all the time, Judge, can my client serve that on electronic monitoring? Can my client have work release privileges or elder care release privileges or school release privileges, whatever's appropriate for that defendant? And judges are in the position of making a recommendation, only a recommendation. But if we don't know what the sheriff's policies are, or better yet, if we knew what the sheriff's policies were, and we could say to that defendant, well, I know the sheriff's rules are that with your background or this crime or this whatever, you will not qualify for the electronic, for the sheriff's electronic monitoring program. So you're wasting your breath. Or, yeah, I think you do qualify based on my understanding of the sheriff's rules, and I have no objection to it. The problem is that the rules changed in midstream for many of these folks. For 200 of them, or 150 of them, that were pulled in off the street, they were following all the rules. They were doing everything that we'd asked them to do, everything the sheriff had asked them to do, and suddenly they're pulled off the street. I asked for this meeting, and I was told I would not get a meeting with the sheriff. Now, my options at that point were to go along with that and once again be frustrated by the fact that I could take part in another meeting with command staff people who could not tell me exactly what the sheriff's rules are. And a number of people in this audience have been at meetings with, as well-intentioned as Inspector Schmidt is, has had to acknowledge that he can only say what he understands the rules are today, and that he'll take things back to the sheriff, and the sheriff will decide what he's going to do. So I felt I had no choice but to bring this matter to your attention, and that's what I did. I asked for it to be placed on this committee's agenda for an informational purposes only. Now, in response to that, the Sheriff's Department asked for a delay so that they could provide you, because one of the core issues is this business of people on electronic monitoring. And what I do understand that even since I filed this, the number of people on electronic monitoring has been reduced even further to the point that there is virtually no one on electronic monitoring in this county. Now, that is at odds with Waukesha County, that runs a virtual House of Corrections, meaning the people come in, check in the morning, and the sheriff there, I don't think, could be accused of being soft on crime by any stretch of the imagination. It is used in every county I'm aware of in this state. Dane County, La Crosse, Rock, Brown, you name the county, they've got a program. So anyway, this matter was delayed for a month so the sheriff could produce a report that spoke to the number, that issue among others, of jail bed costs. And I'm sure that Mr. Chairman and Madam Co-Chair, you'll recall that we were promised that we'd get this report that would show that, in fact, the cost savings was minimal or non-existent between putting someone on electronic monitoring and having them in the jail. Now, if that is true, if that really was what the Sheriff's Department was going to tell you, that would fly in the face of every study I've seen nationwide. And I've seen, and I have some of them here with me today, the national studies show a ratio on average across the country of 6 to 1, meaning it's 6 times more expensive to have somebody in jail than it does on electronic monitoring. But nonetheless, we were told we'd get some kind of a report. I got this report the same time, well, I saw Inspector Schmidt deliver the report. I asked him for a copy. He wouldn't give me one. I had to get one from your staff. So I've not had any more time to see this report than you have, although I guess I had more time to read it because you were conducting other agenda items. But I have a few observations with respect to it. First, with respect to the response to various allegations, increased inmate population. I did not say, never suggested in my letter, that the total population of the jail has not gone down. It has, for a variety of reasons. The Public Policy Forum did a very good report on the reduction in the jail population. What I said was the population should be even lower by the tune of about 200 people. Or, if you don't want to use that number, we could use Inspector Schmidt's number that he told you, by you I mean the county board, back in 2008, when he told, on behalf of the sheriff, told the county board that we should have 300 people on some form of electronic monitoring. And now we have close to zero. So my argument was that the population could be even lower than it is, not that the overall population had gone up. As to the unnecessary delays in the release of defendants to court-ordered programs, I was asking for a meeting with the sheriff to talk about it. Inspector Schmidt should know, because members of his staff have been at monthly meetings convened by me to talk about the delays in getting people out of the jail. And every single month, we have people on our list who have, there's been a delay in getting them out the door of the jail, on bail, because the case was dismissed, whatever the case may be. And representatives of the Sheriff's Department have been at that meeting, and every month, we find a variety of reasons why that's happened. Sometimes it's a delay in the district attorney's office. Sometimes it's a delay in the clerk's office. Sometimes it's a delay in the court processing. And sometimes, and quite often, there's a day, two, or three delay because people have been moved from the central facility to Franklin and not brought back for court or to be released. Inspector Schmidt knows this, but he doesn't put any of that data in this report. He lists, instead, he picks out a group of people that are at the day reporting center and tells you, using this nice chart here, that they were all released within a, or turned over to day reporting center within a day of what? What's the column he uses? Date CCFS notified. That's not the right date. You should be using the date they're sentenced, the day the judge said you can go to the day reporting center. Now, I only had a few minutes to run this, but there's a assistant public defender here who checked with her office. I'm going to just give you a couple of examples. Let's take Roy Lewis, the second person on the list. It says CCFS was notified on April 24th. He was actually sentenced on April 20th, so that's four more days. Let's take Clarence Davis, about number five on the list. So according to Inspector Schmidt's report, notified March 4th, released to Huber March 4th. He was sentenced on February 20th. He sat for 15 days before he was released on Huber from the day the judge sentenced him. Nicholas Rocha, May 9th to May 9th, looks like one day or less. He was sentenced on April 24th. I didn't have a chance. We haven't had a chance to check all these because I didn't get this report until you got it this morning. The next one he responds to, the transport of defendants to South facility resulting in a delay in initial appearance. This is so well documented between my office and the sheriff's office, I'm at a loss to understand why Inspector Schmidt would try and claim that this isn't happening and that we haven't discussed this any number of times to no avail. And that's why I asked for a meeting with the sheriff so that we could get to the top of the command structure and actually affect some change. As to the electronic monitoring rules, I've spoken a little bit about that, but again, the issue here is not whether I'm claiming that judges can put somebody on electronic monitoring. I've never claimed that. Although I will say this. Let me clarify something. There is a statute that says that a judge can sentence someone to home detention. That sentence says, however, or sorry, that statute says that if a judge sentences someone to home detention, they have to be monitored electronically. What the statute doesn't say is by whom. I have no equipment. I have no people in my organizational unit to monitor those people, nor do I have the equipment. The sheriff does. So when the sheriff stopped using his electronic monitoring equipment, I called, spoke to Inspector Schmidt, and said, if you're not using that equipment, and your monitors. How about, and I'll make it clear, I'll take out an ad in the newspaper, I'll issue a press release, I'll go on television, I'll say whatever you want, the sheriff wants me to say, to make it very clear that these people are being put on a home detention sentence because the judge said so, as long as you provide the monitoring. In effect, we'd be contracting with the sheriff to do the monitoring. I was told no. I said, all right, how about let us have the equipment? We'll find the staff, we'll go to the county board and ask for some funding for people to use the equipment to monitor people. I was told no. These are the reasons why I asked for a meeting with the sheriff to try and address these issues. At the end of the day, at the end of this report, you'll see no number from the sheriff claiming what the jail bed costs is in this county. What he tries to say is that I claimed that it's $140. I didn't claim that. Inspector Schmidt sat in this room in front of one of the county board committees and told you it was $140 a day. I didn't say that. He did. Now he's saying that, well, it wasn't for Central. I mean, that was just for Central. It wasn't for the whole thing. I don't know what the number is. We're undertaking an effort with the Public Policy Forum and our Justice Reinvestment Initiative and our grant to determine that number. There are three numbers, by the way. There's an incremental cost. If I send one more person to jail today, the incremental cost for that one person is not going to be great, I grant you. If I send 60 people to jail today, it is going to be great. Why? Because that's another dorm. Or if we save 60 jail beds, we can close a dorm. So there's an incremental cost. There's an operational cost, which is just what's it cost to really run that pod. And then there's the county cost, which I'm not being facetious about, but it's a true one in an accounting sense, which is when you add in all the legacy costs that the county board and the county executive decided is the way to spread out those legacy costs over the entire county operation. I understand that, but that's a much greater cost. I'm not suggesting we should use that number, nor am I suggesting we should use the incremental cost, because we're talking about 200 people with respect to electronic monitoring. That's more than three dorms. And yet, as we sit here today, we don't know what the rules are for who's going to be released on electronic monitoring or when that's going to happen. All I'm asking for, all I was asking for, is some transparency, some collaboration, some cooperation, and at the end of the day, some conversation about what we're doing and how we run the community's criminal justice system as a joint operation between the county board, the county executive, the sheriff's department, the DA's office, and the courts. I thank you for your time this morning.
I know that we have a number of speakers, and I know that many, if not all, of my colleagues have questions or comments. I guess, in fairness, I would like to offer the sheriff's office an opportunity to come forward now, and in a civil manner, I know that that will happen, to refute or rebut or whatever one would like to comment on. I see Inspector Schmidt. Would you like to do that now, or why don't we've heard over the last 20 minutes from Chief Judge Kremers. I think it'd be good to hear from the Sheriff's Department, and then we've got a number of people that have questions.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Inspector Richard Schmidt from the Sheriff's Office, and joining me is John Preeby, our Fiscal Administrator, in case there's issues regarding the financial issues of this. I will stipulate the majority of the beginning of the Chief Judge's comments. However, there obviously are some issues with which we will choose to disagree on. The major issue, there's really a twofold issue that is before us today. The major one is who runs the jail? Who is the constitutional authority over the jail? And that is the sheriff. Who has the statutory authority to run the jail and work with the inmate population Once again, that is the sheriff. I am aware of his policies. I work closely with the sheriff every single day, and those policies have been made known. There are philosophical differences. I will stipulate to that. As has been pointed out, I will not disagree with that there are philosophical differences. The chief judge has already gone through the majority of the report, therefore I will not choose to go through it. We provided copies to the supervisors. They certainly can look at it. The major issue that brought us to the table originally was the issue of inmate population. On the letter that was submitted to you, the face sheet of the letter states the chief judge wanted to discuss inmate population, issues with the inmate population. We provided documentation. He stipulated to that as well, as there has been a drop in inmate population. The only issue at hand then, as far as I've taken from the conversation this morning, is in regards to electronic monitoring. Once again, and I apologize for being redundant, the sheriff has the policy decision as to who does or does not go on electronic monitoring. He is the constitutional authority and has case law on that issue to back that up. It's his choice. If he chooses to put 200 out, it's his choice. If he determines it's in the best interest of public safety and the finances of the taxpayers to not put him out, then he chooses not to do so. Sitting next to me, once again, is our fiscal administrator, who I've had meetings with regarding the issue of electronic monitoring. As you will see in a very detailed and well-put-together report in the next section, which I believe was done by the chief judge's office, it documents in massive detail the statistics that exist with our current inmate population. A major piece of that is who is and who is not currently in our jail at this point. There has been a significant change in the, if you will, the classification of the inmates that come into our facility. I don't like using this, but for sake of clarity, the lower level crimes, if you will, those individuals no longer are in our custody. The majority of those are out on deferred prosecution or no process. We do not see that quote-unquote lower-level crime like we used to see. And once again, the next report will highlight a great deal of that. So that is a major issue on who can we put on electronic monitoring now, who's appropriate for it, what are the level of charges. That is a huge detailed issue that, of course, our office analyzes. Two more maybe brief comments just to set where our context is. Simply put, what is public safety worth to the citizens of Milwaukee County? How much is the different cost between keeping someone on electronic monitoring versus putting them in custody? The chief judge did make reference to my report. The cost, and once again, this is a fiscal issue. Our fiscal analysis is open to anyone. Anyone in DAS, anyone sitting at these tables can analyze the fiscal reports to know what is truth and what isn't. Doesn't have to be me. The truth is, a dorm to open down at the South facility is less than $400,000 a year. That comes out to somewhere around $13 a day for an inmate. The cost of putting someone on electronic monitoring, putting them on SCRAM for alcohol, which has been the majority of the inmates have alcohol issues, plus the cost of monitoring the inmates, plus the cost of bringing them in for random drug testing and alcohol cost, plus the cost of the officers that have to perform the monitoring and watch the computers. When you add all those items together versus the cost of one day incarceration, it is virtually a wash. So even if it came back, which I don't know that it would, it's a couple of dollars more a day to put someone in jail. It's the sheriff's opinion and his belief that the public safety, based on his constitutional authority, based on his statutory authority, this is the right thing to do. So if you want to know what the rules are for someone going on electronic monitoring today, the chief judge, and I will definitely stipulate to that fact, there are little to no inmates that we put on electronic monitoring at this time. There is no crisis in the jail on inmate population. We have 6 dorms closed today, and there's plenty of room at the end, so to speak. Not that we desire to fill it up, but there is no issue there. If it's a financial issue, which it is not, we would certainly take that into consideration, but it isn't even a factor in this. So I will leave off with that. I am always open to talk to the chief judge. I have always respected him as an individual and his authority. I am very displeased we had to end up in this forum for something which the facts are known. And once again, I've got to say this one last comment, and then I promise I will refrain from any more unless asked questions. The fact of the matter is, all of the statistics are well known by the chief judge's office. They know what our population is good or better than we do. You will see that in the next report. They know who's there. They know why they are there. And I have personally sat in the chief judge's office on Monday, May 14th, and gone through that we are not putting people on electronic monitoring. It's no mystery. So with that, I thank you for listening to me. And if you have questions, obviously we will attempt to answer them.
Mr. Preby, I know you're sitting in front of us. If there's anything you'd like to add.
No, I was just here to answer any questions that might come up.
Very good. If I could have Chief Judge Kremers pull up a chair, because we're going to start with Supervisor Broderick and then Weisha. Okay? Jerry, Supervisor Broderick was...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think these policy changes have been characterized as relatively abrupt, and they seem so to me when they occurred. If the sheriff was being cost-conscious all along, the question is, why did he wait so long? I guess is one to employ new strategies, if that's in fact what they are. But it seems to me that all of these policy changes, as abrupt as they were really aimed at increasing the daily jail population, despite the additional cost that would have to the taxpayers of this county. And I could speculate as to the reasons why, given the context in which this occurred. But it seems like the sheriff suddenly became intent on blowing his budget. And some of us were in discussions we had amongst ourselves were wondering if this was a response to the imposed budget cuts in the 12 budget, and that it was, I don't want to use the word tantrum, but it was a response on the sheriff's part to those kinds of cuts, and operating under the constitutional authority he has. No one's arguing those points, but Inspector Schmidt, why is it that the sheriff himself doesn't feel it necessary to meet with the chief judge? Is it that he's simply fearful of doing so? That he'll be outwitted or outgunned? I can't imagine. He is an elected representative of people, as are the rest of us. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me to shirk accountability on his part when he refuses to meet with the head of the third branch of government. And in fact, if it's not a tantrum, what is it?
Supervisor, if I could ask you to direct the questions and comments to me. And
yes, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, but when smoke is blown at me, it obscures my vision.
Okay. Inspector Schmidt, you've heard the question.
Mr. Chairman, I and Mr. Preby will have a comment as well. There's two issues that were just brought up. One is, I will say this. There has been a discussion between the sheriff and the chief judge after this first came out. Now, what was discussed is none of my business. I don't know what subject matter they had. I know they've had at least 2 conversations via the phone lines, and the chief can choose whether or not he wishes to comment on that. But I know they've discussed things. Now, whether they've discussed things that are pertinent to this, I don't know. None of my business. Secondly, as far as the budget goes, since the sheriff was put into office in 2002 and the issue was raised, so I'm going to go there. In 2009, first of all, the sheriff has returned surpluses every year to the county board. In 2009, or actually in 2008, the House of Correction was $6 million in deficit. When the sheriff took over in 2009, we erased that $6 million deficit as well as returned extra funds back to the county board at the end of the year. That has been the pattern. I have no knowledge of anyone in this county government who has returned that much money and saved that much money other than Sheriff Clark. That's not smoke and mirrors. That's documented fact. Therefore, is this what's going on now a response to the budget? And Mr. Preeby will give you the numbers. As I've already testified, that is not a fiscal ploy to cost the taxpayers in Milwaukee County more money. It's done in two ways. Number one, first of all, what's public safety worth? That's an issue. Second of all is, and I'll just give you an example if we're going to go there. Last night at 11 p.m., I got a call, which I do frequently, about an inmate that was on Huber that was arrested last night. All right? That happens. I understand that. I don't want to make a big deal out of the occasional issue right now, but it happens. When we have people in custody, it's a whole lot easier to keep an eye on them and keep them out of trouble if they have a heavier sanction on them. So that's an interesting issue. But I will allow Mr. Preeby to address what was brought up as the fiscal issue.
Mr. Preeby.
This is not something that was done without advanced notice. This is not something that was done surprisingly. If anyone was paying attention, I brought this issue before this body in April of 2011 as part of a corrective action plan trying to balance that budget. The number of employed home detention inmates had gotten so few that it was no longer a cost-effective program. I was successful in getting the board to agree to allow me to charge the unemployed participants for their equipment rental. But many of the unemployed, as we thought might happen, just simply didn't pay. One of the consequences of not paying, they were terminated from the program. I did an analysis at the end of 2011 to identify our actual costs of running the home detention program and the revenues that we had received, and it cost us $1.1 million to monitor an average of 185 inmates. If we took those 185 inmates and put the employed people into the Huber facility, our Huber dorms, which had space to absorb them, so there was no additional cost, no loss of revenue. The employed people just moved from home detention to the Huber site, and the unemployed went into custody. I had to open up two dorms, but we had 20 officers involved in that program. And it only takes 12 officers to run the two dorms, so the additional eight officers could be reassigned to reduce overtime. It saved money to discontinue this program. For 2011, the cost of home detention was $373,000 more than it would have been to house those inmates. The number of employed inmates and total inmates totaled did not justify the cost. Could you run the program differently? Yes, you could. If you go back to the way the House of Correction ran this program, they didn't use any electronic monitoring. They used a telephone call, random phone calls to the house. It was not electronic surveillance. It clearly was home detention. Random phone calls, hopefully somebody's there. If nobody was there, a report came off from the computer. Existing CO staff looked at that report, said, oh, this guy didn't answer his phone. I have to call him personally to call him to come in. If he came in, they'd yell at him a little bit, hey, you have to take this seriously or we're going to cancel you. If the person didn't come in, they didn't have an apprehension unit to go find them. They just marked it in the computer, and the guy walked away. No additional criminal charges were made because they weren't being guarded. They weren't being monitored. The guy didn't answer his phone. We don't know where he is. The sheriff wasn't willing to run a home detention program that was a sham. So he said, we need people, we need better equipment, we're going to monitor these people, we're going to bring them in, we're going to have drug testing. That's the way he was willing to manage the risk of home detention. That's more expensive than it was. Just hey, go home, we'll call you and see if you're there. The program that the sheriff was comfortable with running required staff to be assigned to it. If you had enough employed staff, a better economy, it would pay for itself, it would make sense. The fact that we don't have enough employed people on home detention, it's not cost effective to run it. So we've ended it.
Thank you, Mr. Prevey. And in fairness, I would like to give the chief judge an opportunity to comment on these specific issues. Supervisors, you're going to have to bear with me. I want to be fair to these gentlemen in front of us. You'll all have your chance to ask questions.
Just point of order. The item on our agenda is from the chief judge submitting an informational report on a request to meet with the sheriff. Okay? I don't feel it's in our, you know, best interest of this committee to sit here for an hour to hear a couple groups haggle over numbers. All right? The item that is on our agenda is why is the sheriff not meeting with the chief judge? Anything else is irrelevant, and I suggest is out of order for our committee meeting. And so I want the sheriff's department to explain why they are not setting up a meeting with the chief judge. And that's what's on our agenda.
That is what's on the agenda.
Yeah.
And Attorney Grady, I'm sorry, you were not here when, which is a fair question. Supervisor Weishon was questioning the fact that we are, in essence, deliberating on virtually everything except what the agenda item is, which is from the chief judge submitting an information report on a request to meet with Sheriff Clark to discuss jail population and inmate movement concerns. Okay, and he's correct. We haven't really dealt specifically with that. We've dealt with the report, and I guess I'm looking to Corp Counsel to see if, first of all, are we going into waters that we're not supposed to? And if we have, then how do we get back on track?
Well, I would say from the wording of the agenda item, you are actually still safe. It is an awfully broad subject to the way it's worded. The agenda item says it's a report on a request to meet with the sheriff regarding jail population and inmate movement. That's pretty broad. And I think what we've been listening to is discussion of issues related to jail population and inmate movement. So I understand the concern, and I appreciate you raising it, but I don't see an issue with the open meetings law at this point.
Supervisor Weishon, I'm going to still give you the floor on your point.
Well, the point is simple, and that is what our committee should be doing is directing the sheriff's department, the sheriff, and the chief judge to schedule a meeting, and they should then meet before our next committee meeting. And if the sheriff decides that he doesn't have the time to do that, then I would say that, guess what? We're not going to have the time to take up items related to the sheriff's department. It's as simple as that. I am not here to play referee between different branches of government. I don't know what the correct solution is to the jail population, and, in fact, we're leaving it to the experts to figure it out. But you're not going to figure it out if you don't meet. And Sheriff Clark needs to sit in the same room at the same table as Chief Judge Kremers and come to a solution. And then this committee will entertain that solution and see if we want to fund it or how we're supposed to direct it. But to sit here for the next hour to talk about, you know, how many pods are open is a waste of our time. And, you know, what it costs, because believe me, I can have DAS come down here and give you a bunch of different numbers that tell you just the opposite. So I would like this committee, I don't know if it says as directed by, unless otherwise directed by the committee, and I guess I would make a motion that our direction from this committee is that we will give the sheriff and the chief judge 24 hours to report back to this committee on when their meeting will take place, and then we will look back, we will, at our next committee meeting, look forward to a report on the progress of that that meeting.
Let me look to Corp Counsel. Is that in the purview? I mean, I guess we could virtually do anything, but that doesn't have any teeth, correct?
Mr. Chairman, I would say that you can make the request, adopt a motion to ask that the sheriff and the chief judge meet. You can't force the sheriff to do a meeting, obviously, but you can certainly make the request. And with the notion of what possible implications it will have for the sheriff if he doesn't meet.
Inspector Schmidt.
Mr. Chairman, am I to understand that what's being suggested is that the constitutional authority of the sheriff is now going to be totally implemented and we no longer have to report to the board?
What lawyer in the room wants to answer that one?
Mr. Grady.
Well, first of all, I think that the discussion, and it has been civil, and I'm very appreciative. I think this is good information for all of us. And so this has been something that has been outstanding for a while, 3 months plus. Whether or not we want to force people to get together is another thing to talk about, whether or not it can actually happen in reality. But I do think that the report in front of us is worthy of conversation. We do have people in the audience that also have questions and comments that they need to be heard from. So we can deal with action steps after the committee and the audience has been heard. I'm going to lead off. Chief Judge Kremers, you did not have a chance to address any of the points. Inspector Schmidt, don't go anywhere, please. Don't go anywhere, because we still have other questions. But Chief Judge, in trying to be fair here, I don't know if you wanted to retort any of the comments that were made at the previous conversation.
Just very, very briefly. One, I have in front of me a U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs report evaluating electronic monitoring that says, among other things, the main point of it is that it reduces recidivism. It's an effective tool. We don't have to incarcerate everybody. We can find other ways to sanction bad behavior short of putting them in prison or putting them in jail. We can do other things with them in the hopes that we will reduce the likelihood that they will come back to court. And what this point, what this article, this evaluation points out is that the cost of imprisonment is about six times higher than the cost of electronic monitoring. Now, I heard Mr. Preby say that this shouldn't come as any surprise to anyone. Well, it comes as a huge surprise to the courts that the Sheriff's Department's position is that it's the same or even perhaps higher to put someone on electronic monitoring than it is to incarcerate them in the Franklin facility. That is just flies in the face of the experience across the country. I have said this to any number of people since I first heard this a few weeks ago, but what surprises me today is that Mr. Preby says that he prepared a report for the sheriff or did some kind of an analysis and said we can't afford to do this. That's the why, or at least one why, that we have never heard until this morning. And it's not a surprise that electronic monitoring has dropped to virtually zero. We know that. The courts know that because we hear it from defense attorneys, and we hear it from the DA's office, and we hear it from the defendants. The surprise or the uncertainty is the why. That's why I asked for a meeting. I'm happy to meet with the sheriff anytime. I'm happy to take this out of the sort of this arena where it becomes too easy to just trade numbers back and forth or accusations. I'd much rather sit down and have a conversation. We have a community justice council that's supposed to do that. One last point. Inspector Schmidt indicated that I've had two conversations with the sheriff since this. I have. They relate and related only to, I won't go into great detail, the sheriff's personal request, I guess, personal or maybe as the sheriff, that I open a private John Doe, I don't mean private as secret, involving a citizen where he thought the district attorney's office should issue charges. And he was the moving party. I was the judge. So I had to have a conversation with him about that. He had other members of the command staff on the phone and someone attempting to be his lawyer. And that was the sole substance of the conversation that I had. We've had no conversations. He has not agreed to meet with me with respect to these issues that I think implicate all of our constitutional responsibilities and all of our statutory obligations with respect to Milwaukee County. Thank you for the opportunity to respond.
Okay,
Mr. Chair.
Roderick, you still have the floor.
thank you, Mr. Chair, after that brief interruption. I heard what Mr. Priebe had to say, Mr. Chairman, and it's still very hard for me to understand, particularly given Judge Kramer's comments, how increasing jail population to the max can save tax dollars. It seems counterintuitive, but perhaps if we had our audit department take a look at the figures being offered, we'd have an impartial analysis on which we could base further our own further judgments. And I just offer that as a suggestion rather than a motion. But I'm also not satisfied because I don't think I heard an answer to the basic question why the sheriff is not meeting with the chief judge. I asked, is he afraid of something? And I didn't hear a response to that. There must be a good and sound reason for his resistance as an elected representative of the people to not meet with the head of the third branch of government. And I just haven't heard what that reason is.
Inspector, are you?
Mr. Chair, number one, I don't answer for the sheriff. The sheriff answers for himself. The sheriff makes policy. The sheriff determines his schedule and who he's capable or available to meet with. I don't set his schedule. The chief judge just testified that he's spoken with the sheriff twice since this issue started. What they determine to talk about is none of my business. So I absolutely will not attempt to state why the sheriff makes his decisions. That is a question that any supervisor would like to send questions regarding any issue specific to what the sheriff's answers are, that goes to the sheriff. I will not, absolutely will not speak to what the sheriff does. That is his prerogative. Thank you.
Supervisor Broderick.
Mr. Chairman, it's not in my memory, but perhaps others could help me. When is the last time the sheriff appeared before the Judiciary Committee in person? In other words, is he refusing also to meet with this committee? Because that seems to be implied by his regular absence and his need to send surrogates on his behalf. And again, it raises the question, is he attempting to conceal something? Does he not want to address direct questions from representatives of the people of this community? I just don't understand the general attitude, and I don't think it's reflective of the behavior of any prior sheriff in my memory. So perhaps what we need to do is invite the sheriff personally to come, or as Supervisor Weishaupt suggested, we will only entertain matters from the sheriff's department when? You know, and we do have budgetary control, and I think that would be meaningful to him.
Are you finished, Supervisor?
Actually, I'll probably be finished about 2 o'clock in the morning, Mr. Chairman, as I'm turning over the things I should have said in my mind.
Okay. Supervisor Weishaupt, you have the floor.
Thank you. Well, the point is, once again, it's just what's on our agenda is a meeting between the chief judge and the sheriff. I would like to know when that meeting will take place.
Inspector Schmidt.
very quick response to Mr. Chairman to what's been stated in this room. From a ethical, moral, righteous opinion as to what the sheriff does and why he does it and what is important and how he gets work done has been challenged. I want to be on record as stating that is offensive, it is inappropriate, and unconscionable in my opinion. So I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I asked when would there be a meeting to take place to address the item on our agenda. If that is somehow immoral, I'm a bit perplexed by that or whatever. I think what is immoral and unethical is not to answer our questions. And
Supervisor, at the finish of this agenda item, if the action step is to ask for a meeting or whatever, we can ask for anything. Okay, whether or not it actually happens is another story. And I know that's kind of at the crux of the issue here. But I guess that's what we're dealing with when we're dealing with, in essence, a constitutional officer and this committee. So
you can't hide behind the state constitution. If you want the system to function, people need to communicate. They need to communicate with the legislative branch, the judicial branch, on here that I have absolutely no idea on what are the true needs of the sheriff's department if he's not going to come here and communicate those needs to us and how his actions ripple through the system. So we're trying to be understanding, we're trying to be civil. If people want, you know, to alienate themselves from the process, they can't expect us to help. So,
Supervisor, well spoken. We'll do the best we can. Simple as that. I don't, you know, you can't force someone to come to a meeting, you know.
No, but what we can do, and as I said, I guess that if this is the time that you would like to entertain motions or direction from the committee,
I will come back to you. I want to see if there's other colleagues that have questions. We also have a couple audience members that has some, that would like to comment. So I don't know if Supervisor Johnson, if you had anything?
No, at this time. Okay.
All right. I know Supervisor Harris, would you like to say something?
It's not good for me to say anything right now.
Very good. Okay. we have a couple of audience members that have wanted to say a few words. Rose Stites. Rose, if I could, there she is. And then Kit Murphy McNally would be after Ms. Stites. Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, it's Rose Stites.
Stites, I'm sorry. We'll get it together.
I just have a couple of comments. There were 200 people on monitoring or more. And obviously they were not dangerous. But all of a sudden, these 200 people have become too dangerous to be out in the community, which was what I read in the paper anyway. And so I don't understand how in the last year that all of these people have become dangerous. Secondly, I've been told that people from the Day Report Center, the clients now have to leave the facility at 4:30 in the morning, go to the jail, wait there till 7 o'clock, then get transportation to where they're going, and then do what they're doing during the day, and then that is reversed at night. Now, this is affecting people's lives. And talk about moral or conscience or whatever, these people's lives are being affected, and I just would like some answers to how we can treat people this way when we're supposed to be rehabilitating them. Thanks.
Is anyone able to answer that question? Thank you, Ms. Stites. Ms. McNally, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee. Very briefly, I've been involved in this criminal justice system for 25 years, always outside the system, always as an advocate, I think, for justice. And that's not just how the system works. That's what happens to people in the system. And they are the constituents of every one of you. No matter who you represent, there are people in your community that come into this system. They must be treated with fairness, and they must be given opportunities to change, or our community is not going to be safer. And the attitude that locking people up keeps us safe is very archaic. Now that the evidence has been analyzed and people have really looked at what does work and what doesn't work in our system across the country, that aside, what's been going on the last 2 years now with the criminal justice system is phenomenal. In all these years I have watched this system and been involved in this system, I have never seen the kind of collaboration that exists right now within the criminal justice system and also involving the county board and the county supervisor. But the missing element is the sheriff. And what this is all seeking is evidence-based decision-making, a justice system that works for the benefit of everyone, that's economical, that's safe, that follows best practices that have been studied and evaluated all over this country. And this situation with the sheriff refusing to meet with the chief judge is the sheriff refusing to talk to committees, the sheriff refusing to participate, the sheriff essentially being above the law. And in all honesty, this can't happen. Supervisor Weishan is right. He can't hide behind a constitutional protection. He is answerable to the people, and that doesn't mean this anonymous group of people who voted. This means all of your constituents, and that's where you all are so important. The sheriff did not create a day reporting center. The sheriff did not lobby for a new direct supervision jail. The sheriff did not go to bat for 24/7 medical and mental health care in the jail. This is past sheriffs. This isn't this sheriff. But what did happen was the county board got involved. And on behalf of the people of this county, the board made decisions that were beneficial to everyone. And this is something that's coming back to all of you now. It really does involve the county board. It's an issue that's got to be resolved, because things are not going to go forward in a just way if one of the most important people is not a party to it. So thank you for being willing to listen to some of these issues. I hope that all of you and others on the county board will listen to constituents who want to talk more about what's going on, because real harm is being done. It truly is. And you need to hear about it. You need to understand it. And I think be a part of figuring out how do we make this work for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McNally. Is there anyone else in the audience? I don't have any other cards, but would be happy to entertain anybody else that would like to speak from the audience. And we just have to have you fill out a little blue card here. Reverend?
Joel Wenger, head of the Lutheran Church, and with Micah. I'd like to affirm everything that Kit McNally just said, and to put a perspective on that, as a, not simply a clergy person, but as a citizen in this county, what I would hope we are all concerned about is the future of the individuals involved, caught up in the judicial correctional system, their families, their neighbors, their community. And everything, as Kit McNally just said, from studies and research shows that the low-level persons and the 85% of the people that hit the judicial correctional system with underlying alcohol and other drug addiction issues and mental health issues are not helped by pure incarceration, but only with assistance that is available. Especially, it's much more effective when it's community-based rather than incarceration-based, whether it's drug treatment or whether it's helping people along the way to understand whatever their issues are, mental health and the like, I do not hear the sheriff saying that I am taking people out of the day report center, out of monitoring, to help rehabilitate them and give them the services that they need. It is rather incarceration. And that is clearly not what 85% of these people are going to really need and are going to turn them around. And so from the perspective of what's best for the people in our communities, which you represent and which we are all hopefully concerned about, how the system works is not just something for the Board of Supervisors or the sheriff to tinker with, but something that impacts the lives of everybody in this county, not just the people who come through the judicial correctional system. And therefore, we have to be concerned about how this happens. And the amazing thing is that the system that really does work at getting at underlying issues and causes in people's lives just happens to be less expensive. But that's not the main issue. Even if it came out the way the sheriff says, that they're about 50-50, I have great difficulty seeing and understanding and believing that. But if that were the case, the bottom line is what is best for the outcomes for these individuals, for their families, and for all of us. And clearly it is the kind of treatment and action that we see in a day report center, that we see in the drug treatment courts, that we see in this movement to rehabilitate people and not just to put them into a place where they are day in and day out observed and nothing else. That all of that, it therefore requires and is a mandate. That's what is right and just and moral, that we really seriously talk about the impact of the system and not just go along with what one person wants. We're all in this together.
Thank you, Reverend Joe. Supervisor
Mr. Chair,
Broderick,
just very briefly, I was listening carefully to Inspector Schmidt's comments, and he indicated in the body of those comments that the majority of inmates have alcohol-related issues. Mm-hmm. And I think that that only underscores what Reverend Ellwanger has said, and Ms. McNally. Serious problem, and one that I think needs our attention as well as the sheriff's on an ongoing basis.
Very good. And any other audience members? And if I could have you fill out the blue card when you get a chance.
I believe I did, but I think it might have been filed under the mental health item.
Oh,
I
know.
Jean Gerasi.
Oh, okay. We didn't have, I'm sorry, Jean, we did not have a number on this.
And that was probably my fault.
No problem. And so we'll do, and then you're going to be with us on number 5 too, right?
Sure.
Okay. I'm sorry, Ms. Gerasi.
Thank you, Chairman and committee members. My name is Jean Gerasi. I am the executive director of the Benedict Center, which is an interfaith community justice organization that has been serving this community since 1974. And I really appreciate the opportunity to have some open dialogue for the community to understand these policy changes and the impact on the community. The public is absolutely interested in balancing public safety with costs, but the public is also astute enough to appreciate widely vetted studies and scientific evidence that demonstrates best practices and cost-effective solutions when that information is made available to us. And so this is the platform and the opportunity for that kind of democracy to happen. Specifically, some of the impact I've seen from this change in electronic monitoring is impacting some of the programs that we run at the Day Reporting Center. The Benedict Center has a contract to run restorative community service there at the Day Reporting Center, which also provides the much-needed drug and alcohol treatment. When the Huber facility was moved to the South facility, there became a transportation problem that was exacerbated when people on electronic monitoring who would come to the Day Reporting Center were then pulled into Huber. And that's what Sister Rose is referring to in terms of the best solution put forth thus far is in order to move people to their treatment, they're woken up at 3 in the morning, put on a bus from Franklin at 4:30 in the morning to the downtown jail where they're held for another period of time before released to take a city bus to get over to 9th and Mitchell to then begin intensive treatment. Now, that's adding, and then it's done all over again. It's really kind of spirit-breaking. And in some ways, I think involving yourself in drug and alcohol treatment requires a much higher level of accountability than just passing away your day sitting in a cell because you're really being introspective. It's very difficult to get people to focus on getting their GED, their treatment, doing community service when they're that tired, frankly. And so it's counterproductive to the kinds of things that we're doing. But it's difficult to get around and plan or know what future plans need to happen when we don't know and we're not all in agreement on the principles that need to be held for these kind of cost-saving treatment alternatives like electronic monitoring. At this impasse, I think that what we're going to have to continue to do as a community, and I think that the Common Council or the County Board of Supervisors will have to be part of that solution, is finding creative policy changes and solutions so that we can still advance the criminal justice system here in Milwaukee County, regardless of one person trying to hold it all up. So I just ask you to continue this dialogue, not to accept these numbers at face value that were turned in. They're very questionable, and I think we need deeper investigation and much more dialogue. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Chief Judge, yes. Thank you.
Perhaps I'm going to make your job a little easier, perhaps not. I want to be clear, Mr. Chairman, I'm not asking this committee to order a meeting between the sheriff and I think that would be counterproductive and, in my experience, probably not effective. Rather, my intention was to make sure that the members of the county board that comprise the Judiciary Committee were aware of some issues with respect to the jail so that when we get into the budget season as the summer wears on and various folks come before you, whether it's myself on behalf of the courts or people from the Sheriff's Department on behalf of their budget, that you are fully informed as to some of the issues and can choose for yourself what you want to do about that within your area of expertise and responsibility. So I want to be clear. I'm not asking you to order a meeting. The sheriff knows where I am. If he wants to discuss these issues, all he has to do is call me, and I will continue to try and meet with him or other members of his staff to try and address day-to-day issues. But so if that makes your job this morning a little easier, I'm just trying. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Judge. Is there anyone else in our audience that would like to be heard? If not, then I look to my colleagues as to what the pleasure is of the committee. Supervisor Weishaupt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I'd like to do is, from direction from the committee, is that we make a formal request for the sheriff to come down and appear before our committee to discuss population issues and inmate movement concerns. A direct appearance by him, I think, would help the situation. And then we can evaluate from that point on if other discussions need to take place.
Okay. Supervisor Broderick.
Mr. Chair, in that case, to create a healthy context, I think, I would then move to refer the Sheriff's Department submission to the Audit Department for analysis to be provided prior to that next meeting.
Okay. Attorney Grady.
Just to be clear, given recent reorganization, I think the referral is technically to the Office of the Comptroller.
Oh, I thank you very much. I'm old dog learning new tricks. The Office of the Comptroller, Audit Division.
So, Supervisor Weishan, you accept that as a friendly amendment?
Yes.
Okay. Anybody else like to say anything? Let me look to our clerk or research analyst. What is the official commentary that we're voting on?
I have it listed as a request for the sheriff to appear directly before the committee to discuss jail population and inmate movement concerns.
And then did you get the audit piece?
And then the Comptroller's Office Department of Audit to review the report.
Okay. Does that summarize what the supervisors wanted?
Sounds good.
Okay.
Good.
Any further matter on this issue? Then, Madam Clerk, on the motion by Supervisor Weishan.
Supervisors Harris?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Weishan?
Aye.
Broderick?
Aye.
Sanfilippo?
No.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
5 ayes, 1 no.
Okay, thank you. Madam Clerk, item number